Hey, it's Dean from Collective Soul, and you are listening to the Brutally Delicious Podcast. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Dean?
Doing well, buddy.
Hey, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Where are you at today?
I am at home. I live in San Diego, so I'm home for a little bit. Yeah.
You got a whole big year coming up, huh?
We do. It's going to be a busy one. So
I guess
I'll cherish my time at home, and then I'm off to the war.
Yeah, but let's just jump right in. I guess the first thing I was thinking was, you ever imagine you'd still be doing this so many years later?
No, not really. I mean, you know, when we started, my brother and I were when you have the good fortune and you have, you know, some mainstream success, and you know, it's a bit of luck, in fact. We hoped, I mean, we took it serious, and we were very grateful for the opportunity to be able to do what you love. And we hoped that we could stretch it out for as long as we could, but you never know. And then you're caught up in the middle of it all, and you have ups and downs. But it's fun looking back on it now, and we can do it with a lot of pride.
Oh yeah, because most people don't last, you know, two albums, and here you are, I don't know, 30 years later, still making music. So,
yeah,
pretty crazy. So, Here to Eternity is the new record, and I want to get into that in a second. But I really want to talk about the recorded at Elvis's place. Did I read that right? How was that? What was that like?
It was a trip, man. So Elvis owned two houses. He had the one in, obviously, Graceland in Memphis, and then he and Priscilla, they had done their honeymoon in Palm Springs at another house, but loved Palm Springs, and he bought a house, which is the one we recorded. And I guess it was a few years back we met the guys who owned the house. They bought it essentially as like a investment and just kind of been sitting on it. No one lived there. And we just threw out the idea, like, would you be cool if we just put our studio gear in there and record a record? I mean, Elvis had, I think he's the only one that recorded there ever. And he did a couple of gospel albums or gospel records.
Right.
And so that's kind of how it flushed out. And we were already recording or documenting a career spanning documentary. Mm-hmm. And so we documented the recording of Here to Eternity along with the archival footage that we had been doing anyway.
Yeah.
So all of it's, you know, documented. It was a lot of fun.
Were you able to channel some of his vibes?
Yeah. We gave it a go for sure. it's interesting. So the house itself really hadn't changed much since he passed. Like, same like kitchen appliances, same bathrooms. Yeah, so that part was a little it was cool. It was a little eerie, you know.
Yeah.
You know, same.
But eerie in a cool way, though, right?
Yeah, in a great way, for sure. You know, you go in with some reverence because he's one of our heroes for sure.
Right.
Reverence and respect. And, you know, we're setting up and we're getting our stuff together and you find our spots, how we're going to, you know, drums are going to be here. Jesse and I are going to be here. Will and Ed. And you're kind of like, wow. You know, you have a couple of those pinch me moments and you're like, good grief. Like, how did we get here? What's going on?
Right.
And then you kind of fall into the creative bubble. You're in your zone and you just go to work. But who knows what the external vibes really, you know, esoterically speaking, like kind of seep in.
Right. So let's talk about the record then. Here to Return, you're all in the house recording and writing. 20 songs is a lot.
Yeah.
How long did were they all written at the same time there? Or was that like over a period of time and then you went there to record them?
So pretty much, I think, half were written leading into it. And then once we got in there, we had been playing some of those songs live and we had been playing live anyway. So that like just the chemistry in the band was just working. That was like already happening. So once you get in the studio and we're doing like the guts parts of the songs,
right.
It happened fast on that first batch. And then once we were already in that flow, it was just like, let's keep it going. And we've talked about doing a double record over the years, but almost like maybe one day kind of thing. We grew up on Goodbye Yellow Brick Road or
Right.
The Wall or those types of, not even they're not concept records, but like just
Right. Big records.
those, yeah. So it was a little bit of a dream, probably even more for Ed, but I've always been up for the idea. It's just a matter of like not forcing it and seeing if we can catch
Right.
that momentum and just roll with it.
So let me ask you a question then, and don't take this the wrong way by any means, but in a culture, especially music culture now, where everyone's got like 30-second attention spans or one song, was there ever any trepidation about saying, hey, we're going to put out a double record and totally buck the system?
No, I mean, we don't. I mean, it is such a right now moment, right now world,
Right.
but we've never really been the kind of band that really adheres to too much pop. I mean, I don't know how to say it. Like we're not like chasing the current moment necessarily. It's
Right.
we know we feel like we know what we do best, and we do our best offering each time, and it hopefully people like it and it connects, and if it doesn't, it doesn't, but you do the best you can. And I don't know, like some of the best music I've heard, I mean, hell, when I was growing up, I probably didn't really start digging into the Beatles until I was late teens, maybe even
Right.
later. Like the music is there. Once it's there, it's there for the finding and seeing what works, and can't really live in the moment of reward or just
That makes
immediate.
sense.
You just gotta you put your offering out and hopefully people love it and enjoy it.
Okay. So when you guys are writing then, I mean, with all these years behind you, do you ever find, or how much effort do you put into not writing the same song? I mean, you still got to stay in your collective soul wheelhouse, right? Because that's your fan base. But you don't want to rewrite the previous however many records or songs, right?
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, we don't.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of the Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, man, I gotta hear that. Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts. And new episodes come out every Monday.
We've always followed, I mean, our mantra really has been we serve the song. And then you kind of break that down even further, and you serve pieces and you serve a spark of inspiration. And so when you reverse engineer it, you serve that spark of creativity or inspiration, and you start to build off of that. So wherever that leads you is it's going to be ultimately a culmination of all the things that have inspired you along the way, and the things that you lived through. So that could come through the lyrics or the sounds or whatever. So we've never really put ourselves in any kind of box or under too much pressure of trying to recreate or avoid what we've done. Like it's
Right.
a little cliche, I guess, but we're just trying to be who we are and our authentic self.
You guys are getting ready to do a pretty extensive tour. How do you prepare for something, especially at this age, right? Because we're not young anymore.
Yeah. Get on the treadmill and do my workouts. I think fortunately we're still inspired enough and passionate to think, you know, passionate enough to get on that stage and enjoy playing music. And it really is so much fun. Like, it's a total blessing that we're just like thankful to be able to do it. So we don't consider it any sort of like stressful things, more like fun. Let's go do it. And it's not a whole lot of preparation other than making sure we know the tunes and everybody's in good mental shape, you know, going into it. Cause that's one of the tougher parts. You go on the road and everybody has families. And so you're making those personal sacrifices while you're gone, and the families come to visit and all of that type of stuff. But there's a lot of downtime on the road that you got to stay clear and present, you know?
Yeah. What's a Collective Soul show like these days? It's got to be multi-generational, right? With people like myself bringing their kids, maybe even grandkids at this point.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting. It probably started, I'm guessing, like maybe 10 years ago or so, but more and more like, yeah, parents bringing their kids and even grandkids now. Right. I love it. We love it. You know, we'll do our meet and greets, or we're relatively accessible, you know, somewhere. If we're in the city, we're kind of around, whether it be a restaurant or a bar or whatever, hotel. And it's always fun to hear the stories of people that, we got engaged at your show or whatever their story may be, and now we're bringing our children.
Yeah,
it's the cycle of it all, and I think it's great. I feel a little old sometimes, but that's okay.
No, because I imagine, like, you know, Collective Soul being at this point, you're the soundtrack to a lot of people's lives.
Yeah,
whether you want it to be or not, right? I mean, you've just kind of been ingrained in the whole.
Yeah,
scene.
Very true, and that, you know, that's the beauty of it, the circle of the whole thing. Like, we all started, I mean, I started out as a fan of music. I mean, I was a kid loving music, MTV, early MTV generation, right? Like watching videos and just being enamored with it all, or, you know, going to see U2 when I was 16 years old and Joshua Tree tour, and, you know, just being in awe of that, whatever that feeling was. And I didn't know that I was going to be a part of it on like a musician or artist side of it, but that I knew that I wanted to be a part of it somehow. It was just, it was something that I knew or I felt inside of me that I was going to be associated with in some form or fashion.
Nice. So one more, not Collective Soul related at all. You mentioned the Beatles. What's your favorite record?
Revolver.
Okay.
And then probably, and then
I'm a Rubber Soul guy.
Are you?
I love Rubber Soul. Yeah.
Yeah. That was such a cool time, man. They were. That I love those records, and I mean, I love them all. But
absolutely. I was just trying to pick your brain for a second. And
yeah. What's your thoughts on the White Album?
I mean, I guess it's the politically correct thing to say that it's awesome. Right. I think it could have been a single record, and it probably would, and I'm probably going to get killed for that. But I think it could have been a single record and been amazing.
That's what George Martin always said. Or
he did? Had
George Martin, yeah. He was like, I really think they could have made one record out of that one, and it had been exceptional. But, I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's still exceptional, right? We're here talking about it 50 years later. So
true.
But yes, I think one amazing record rather than two good ones, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yep. I think you could almost, even with ours on Here to Eternity, I think you could always, if you're a fan of the band, you're going to have, you know, good, better, best.
Right.
And like, if you're a fan of Collective Soul and what we do, I'm sure fans are going to be like, and that song, no. But they could sculpt it down to, like, but, you know, that's kind of the part of the fun of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's going to bring me to the end of my time. I appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Cool.
I appreciate your contributions to the music world. Thank you so much. Good luck on the road.
Thank you, Bruce.
Dean, thank you so much. Good luck on the road, and good luck with the record. been a
right,
pleasure.
cool. Thanks, my
Take care, my
friend.
friend. Be
Cheers,
well.
Liz.
Bye bye.
Hey, you. Did you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends, Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-d.com, soundtalentmedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.